Welcome back to Earth. Hey, everyone. This is your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast, Scrambled Eggs, here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here once again. And Phil, I think we made that mistake. We got a little too excited after the Vanderbilt win.
A little bit is an understatement of the year. Man, that crashing sound you hear is the hopes and dreams of every Marquette fan.
Yeah, I think we made the mistake that we're trying not to make again of getting too high after wins and too low after losses. We got just way too high, and I don't think we're alone in that regard. But we're going to break down Marquette's two losses at the 2K Classic and then look ahead to what they have going forward. But there's a lot of angst in the Marquette community, Phil, after a very disappointing showing in the 2K Classic. Basically just getting blown out of the water by Michigan in a game that really was not as close as the final score would indicate. And then blowing a big lead and losing to Pitt after being by up as many as 15 in the second half.
Yeah, they were up by 11 at half, up by 15 at some point in the second half, and had at least two or three opportunities in the last 20 seconds to win or tie the game.
So, in other words, it did not go well.
Yeah, it was maybe we abused the sad pit bear meme.
Maybe so. Maybe now it is the sad Marquette Golden Eagle, which is us. But what we're going to do now is just kind of go through what we perceive Marquette's issues to be. And a lot of people have already kind of chimed in on this. Both Anonymous Eagle and Paint Touches have had some good stuff this week about some of the things that have gone wrong through the first four games. And we're going to try to keep a perspective that it is still just four games, but I think the thing I'm most disappointed in, Phil, is kind of what you talked about going into the 2K Classic, is that Marquette really missed an opportunity to get two decent wins in its non-conference schedule against two teams that may be tournament teams, and basically they've put themselves in a position where they really need to fix things pretty quickly if they want to have anything that resembles a tournament-quality non-conference resume.
Yeah, that's – I mean, listen, Michigan may turn out to be really good because after they boat-raced Marquette, they kind of boat-raced SMU, who's probably decent at least. So, you know, the Michigan loss, there's takeaways to take away from that. But, you know, the two – those are against teams, Michigan and Pitt, that we're likely competing against for bubble spots, if at worst case bubble spots. And on top of that, that with those two losses, if you look at the schedule, the quality wins left on the schedule to get are at Georgia, Wisconsin at home, and maybe Fresno State at home.
So basically three consecutive games within a 7-day span.
Correct. With a road trip in there as part of that 7-day.
Right, so that's Sunday, December 4th. 2 days later on the 6th, they play Fresno State at home. And then 4 days after that, they get Wisconsin at home. So that's 7 days where they will really – those are only three decent really opponents left in the non-conference schedule. So, I mean, you got to get two of those for sure, and I would love to get three. But we're getting way ahead of ourselves, Phil. In your mind, what really went wrong with the team at the 2K Classic? Let's just start maybe with some specifics and look at the Michigan game.
Well, I think one of the things, and I'm going to circle back to it because I have a much larger rant around coaching coming up later, but I think one of the non-coaching related things, the mistake we kind of made, and we talked about it significantly in the last podcast, was, well, we have so many great shooters that we can have half the team have an off night and we can still hit, we'll still be fine.
That was false.
Just patently false. Like, full stop, that is not true. We just had very poor shooting on top of very poor shot selection in certainly in the Michigan game, somewhat in the Pitt game as well, that just shot any hopes of Marquette being able to keep up with Pitt or Michigan. Even look at the second half when we were down by gargantuan amounts and we, you know, Michigan kind of came off the gas and Marquette closed within 12. And I don't remember if it was Caton or Juwan Johnson took a three that would have brought us within single digits, but it was out of rhythm, missed badly. And then Michigan never looked back after that was, I think, at the 7-minute mark. Just shot selection and ability to hit the outside shot just was not there.
I believe that was definitely Reinhardt is the player you're talking about. But I think there were like three or four possessions there, about three possessions in the second half where Marquette, where if they could have gotten a bucket, that would have had that feeling of, well, maybe we have a shot here. Because it would have gotten, if anywhere between 10, you know, 10 to 8 points, depending on if they could have gotten a shot there, and they just they kept. So I think Reinhardt missed a couple, and I think Cheatham, or it was either Cheatham or Juwan Johnson missed one right at the rim. Now, and but the overwhelming thing for me, Phil, was the defense, and just they just got severely outcoached in that game. If you're watching that, that was a coaching mismatch in my estimation. John Beilein had something ready to go, and he was running pick and roll all day, and Marquette never stopped it. You know, Paint Touches did a very good breakdown of what was wrong with Marquette's pick and roll defense, and it just seems like guys were constantly out of position. They were switching late, or they were sticking with the the ball handler when they should have stuck with their man. And it seems like routinely guys were out of position, and Michigan, and obviously a well-coached team, was always finding the wide-open guy and got so many open looks.
Yeah, and I think the pick-and-roll defense, and I even commented on it on Twitter, is I for the seven of you who follow me, the pick-and-roll defense, I think that's been a real struggle for Marquette, and especially Fisher. In his time at Marquette, I cannot remember a time where Marquette has not struggled in their pick and roll defense. And it's really starting to be a problem, because if you've got an athletic big and a ball handler at the point guard, you almost assuredly can score on Marquette at will. And there's just, I mean, there were times, and it blends a little bit with Pitt, but there were times where Matt Helt was the better defensive option on the court than Luke Fisher, and that just boggles the mind.
Yeah, do you think Wojo's going to have to do what he hates doing every year and do his what has become a ritual and die a little inside and go to some zone defense? Because the past 2 years, we know Wojo wants to play man-to-man defense, an aggressive man-to-man defense, and we thought going into the season that he finally had the personnel to do it. First year, he just had no bodies, and he had to do it to keep guys out of foul trouble. And last year, he went to some zone defense as well when it just wasn't working out with Ellenson and Fisher playing man-to-man. Do you think Wojo may have to reluctantly go back to some zone defense again?
Unless he figures out how to teach man-to-man defense. I mean, quite frankly, at this point, I'm not convinced that they are teaching them man-to-man defense effectively, because every time, certainly in the Michigan game, somewhat in the Pitt game, they were either a step early leaving their man, leaving an open outside shot, or they were a step late rotating away from the help and back to their man and gave up a drive into the bucket and an easy basket. It's a question of, is it players failing to execute? Is it coaches failing to teach? Is it a bad strategy? Like, it does the type of high ball pressure, extended man-to-man defense just not work in the game the way it's configured now? I don't know, but whatever it is, it done broke.
Or there's also the possibility that Marquette just has way too many guys who are bad defensive players on the team.
Yeah, that is a possibility.
I would like to think that is not the case, because when I look at a few guys individually, I think Cheatham's a pretty good defender. I think Tracy Carter can be a good defender at times.
Yep.
But maybe when you get beyond that, and I think Juwan Johnson can be good at times, but I wouldn't certainly call him an elite defender yet. But I think it's been pretty obvious Luke Fisher has gotten beaten pretty badly defensively a few times, and you know, I think Hauser's still learning, but. Yeah, I think it's a combination of things, Phil. I don't think Marquette really has an elite defender on the team, if you're talking personnel-wise. But, yeah, I think it's legit to question if the coaching staff has a good defensive strategy. And I think they keep insisting on we're going to play an aggressive man-to-man, and it failed miserably in New York. There's just no question about it.
Well, and you wonder, again, through both the Michigan and the Pitt game, I mean, perhaps we're worse than novices at this, right? I mean, our practical experience with basketball includes pickup games and whatever we watch on our couch.
And video games.
And video games. That's true. I mean, we were tremendous at the NCAA basketball game.
So good.
So very good. But anyway, I mean, so there's probably there's definitely nuances we miss. But I have not seen and this is what gets me back to the coach rant I'm going to go on at some point, is I have not seen in the primary man-to-man defensive strategy, I have not seen tweaks or changes over the last couple of years. The biggest tweak, like you pointed out, was going to the 2-3 zone, but that's going to a whole other defensive scheme. Like,
right.
there is nothing that seems to – I mean, there was little things like in the pick game where when Fisher just got smoked by Michael Young repeatedly, that they switched Hauser onto Young. And they changed some matchups here and there, but it seems like they've got a plan and they're gonna work their plan no matter what the results are. There doesn't seem any ability to improvise or to change what you're doing when you find it's not working.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and ask you to maybe expound on what like your big coaching rant was. That like a part of it, or was there some more points?
Well,
the
big coaching rant is that I'm really. And at the beginning you said we don't want to get as low as the low and as high as the high. But I'm really – this Pitt and Michigan State game are really starting to make me concerned that Wojo just might not be a good coach. I think he's a great steward of the program. I think he's a good leader of the program in the total sense. I think he's certainly a very good recruiter. I mean, there is no doubt that this team has a ton of talent. But the talent on this team
– I wouldn't say ton of talent.
Okay.
Go on.
But it has enough talent. I mean, the first 10 minutes they hung with Michigan before getting blown out. They had a 15-point lead against Pitt. You know, it takes talent to run. I don't care how bad Vanderbilt is. They're still a Division I SEC program. It takes talent to run a 24-point lead on them. The talent is there for this to be a competitive program. And it feels like... maybe Wojo just, because this is the third year in a row where we're seeing the same mistakes, the inability for the defense to adjust and make changes on the fly. And one of the biggest things is the end of the Pitt game, end of game situations. Like, just how many end of game situations have we had where we've just looked inept? It's not just that they're not successful. Like if a shot doesn't go in, but it's a good look, or it's, you know, you drew something up that makes sense and the shot goes up. Okay, great. I it sucks, but I can live with that. But this is end of game situations now where we just looked incompetent.
Yeah. I thinking about the end of the Pitt game, the play he drew up was for something for Rousey going to the rim. Right. And you know, it just got rejected. Wojo said after that game was he wanted, you know, Rousey had the hot hand and he wanted to get something for him, which I don't necessarily disagree with. I just not sure I want a 5'10 guy who is not Frank Mason going to the rim. There's just so many guys who are that small who can get to the rim effectively, especially in crunch time. I would not have drawn up something, but that's just nitpicking one thing. But I think your larger point is maybe that they're just not sure who to go to in crunch time. And that's something that that I briefly touched on in the preseason is when you asked me why I didn't think this was a tournament team. I'm not sure they have that guy. I'm not sure they have that alpha dog, the guy you want with the ball in crunch time. Not only was I wondering who's going to get the ball, I was wondering who's even going to be on the floor. I don't know who the guys are. And this is something I asked you about earlier today and I want to bring up on the podcast is, I think having depth is great, but when no one really knows what their role is, and Matt Velasquez wrote a good article on Monday about the point guard situation and how they're still trying to figure it out because there's no real separation there. I think there could be a problem with rhythm sometimes. And again, this is speaking as an outsider from an athlete perspective. I've never really been on a team. Any kind of major team like that at a varsity level, but I would think it helps for a team to have defined roles where a guy goes up to the gym and he can guess pretty close to what his playing time is going to be. And there are only two guys on this team who know definitely what their roles are, and that is Luke Fisher and Matt Helt. Luke Fisher knows he's the starting center and is probably going to play the lion's share of minutes, and Matt Helt knows he's the backup center and he is going to be in there when Luke either needs a rest or is in foul trouble. Those two guys know their roles. Pretty much everyone else on the team shows up to the gym or shows up to the arena on the weekends and wonders, I could play 25 minutes or I could play two. And I think there are some guys who would like to be the man, but they're still trying to prove that they are. And maybe the team can't get into rhythm Some of these guys can't get into a rhythm, and maybe they're trying too hard to prove that they deserve minutes. Maybe that's an issue with Reinhart, and that's something I want to get into in a little bit, is his struggles early on. But I think, well, I said the depth is good, but I think this team not having any roles and not being able to figure out who they are as a team, I think maybe that could be a reason for some of the early season struggles as well. And that goes back to the point we started with of the late game situation. Not only do I not know who should take the shot, I don't know who should be on the court.
Right. But again, that goes back to coaching, right? I mean, to your point, versatility and depth are very useful tools if used effectively or used intelligently. Where, you know, just blind ambiguity and, hey, we'll see what happens and who's playing best. You know, how do you have any set flow or set organization, right? I mean, because Andrew Rousey is, just to keep it simple, Andrew Rousey is going to play differently with Juwan Johnson on the court than he is with, you know, Dwayne Wilson on the court, right? I mean, because...
Yeah, it's much different for him where if he's the point guard with Cheatham and Juwan Johnson, where there is he's the two guard with Tracy Carter and Caton Reinhart over there. So, yeah, I think it's... And you know, I will say this in defense of the coaching staff as they try to figure out this team. This is probably the toughest four-game start for Marquette in a while as far as scheduling, as far as like not having more bye games than legit opponents in the first four games. I mean, they've played three Power 6, kind of still trying to make that a thing, opponents.
talk to Paint Touches about that.
Again, I feel I'm giving Paint Touches a lot of plugs in this week, But yeah, I think it has. They haven't. What my point is, they haven't had three bye games to just kind of figure it out, where the final score was never in doubt, right? I mean, the three of these four games, victory was in doubt at halftime, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, it's nice to have those blowouts, those cupcakes, where you can let the team get into a rhythm a little bit, and you know, after three or four bye games, you can say, okay, this is my starting five, and these next three are the first three off the bench, and then the rest of you guys, I'm sorry, but you're kind of buried on the depth chart. And maybe that's what Marquette can figure out over these next three games against IUPUI, Houston Baptist, and Western Carolina, is to get some separation in the roles on the team and kind of get some better definition on that depth chart.
Yeah, you know, but if you look at the minutes, I mean, there seems to be if the minute distribution, at least so far, there seems to be a core of five or six players that are getting the majority of the minutes. I think what combination they play in is yet to be determined, but God help us, Caton Reinhart is playing a large number of minutes. Luke Fisher is playing a large number of minutes. You know, Hanif Cheatham is playing a large number of minutes, and then it's some combination of and then Juwan Johnson's playing. So those four, Cheatham, Johnson, Reinhart, and Fisher are, you know, relatively solid. And then it's some combination of Hauser, Wilson, Rousey. That's probably it. That's probably the core that are getting the most minutes. So, I mean, it's not like we're going 11 deep, but yeah, it's just not consistent. It's as if they haven't found the two or three lineups that they want to go with at any given time.
Yeah. And since you brought him up, I do want to touch on Caton Reinhart a bit. Cause again, another plug for Paint Touches, but they wrote a good breakdown of, again, not putting all of the early season struggles on him, but there's no question that he has been part of an issue early on here. Is, and again, this is falls under not trying to get too low after a loss. I'm trying to, you know, be patient with Caton Reinhart that it has just been four games, and maybe he's pressing a little bit to try to prove himself with his new team. But there's no other kind way to say it. Early returns have not been good with him. He is shooting 27% from the floor, and he is shooting 29% from three. That's not going to cut it. Because if he's not making shots, I'm not sure what he's doing out there.
What's disastrous is his two-point shooting is a lower percentage than his three-point shooting, and his three-point shooting percentage is bad.
Yeah, it's bad. He rushes shots, man. And
Out of the flow of the offense. I mean, they're in the.
He's a ball stopper, and you know that's got to stop, man. And again, I'm trying to be patient with him because he came in because you know career wise, obviously he's you know a little better. You know he's a little better than that. He came in with a reputation as a scorer, as a 3-point shooter. You know for his. Gosh, what was his career 3-point percentage? Obviously, it's you know it's much better than that, but 3-point percentage for his career is closer to 37%.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
yeah.
I mean, that's obviously really good, and that's what Wojo was expecting. Now, again, we're just four games in. Maybe he's pressing a little bit, and hopefully, he could turn things around. But you know, if he scores you know 20 points a game in these next three bye games, I'm not going to get too excited. I want to see how he does against a real opponent.
Well, yeah, I mean, but if you look at if you go to KenPom and you look at so he played at UNLV, sat out a year, USC 2 years, and now he's at Marquette. His effective field goal percentage, which accounts for the efficiency difference between a 2-point and 3-point shot, he had a almost 46% as a freshman. 46.4% as a super sophomore, so a little better. Then he went up to 53.4% at USC. He's at 33.8% right now. Like, he fell off a cliff. So that tells you two things. One, that the law of averages say that has to come back up at some
right.
point. But two, I mean, that just shows that – not that that is the only reason, but that is a correlation to why Marquette has underperformed in those last two games.
Yeah, and as Payne Touch has pointed out, he has the worst offensive rating on the team and the highest possessions usage.
Yeah.
That's a huge problem.
Right,
so that has to change.
Right, but that goes – now, to Wojo's credit – Reinhardt jacked up two out of the offense early shot clock threes midway through the second half, and you saw Wojo sub him out and sit him on the bench for a little bit. But at that point, the bleeding was almost uncontrollable.
Right.
But that's a perfect example where you go, does he not have control of, like, how does someone's efficiency go so far downhill in this offense? Does he not have control? Is Reinhardt?
Maybe I will say this in his defense. He is playing out of position. He would probably much rather be a two guard. But, you know, if he wanted to be a two guard, I question why he came to Marquette to begin with, because the depth chart wasn't a mystery when he committed.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, he's playing like a 3-4.
Well, he's got to play so he's got to get a lot of minutes, right? I understand that Wojo doesn't have a lot of options at the four, especially now, given something, you know, given some news that broke for once before we recorded.
Yeah.
So he's got to get a lot of minutes because there really aren't, other than Sam Hauser, there aren't any other options at the four. So I get that he's got to get minutes, but I don't know. I don't know. I just don't know how he's not coached up to say, hey, listen, if you get the urge to take a shot early in the shot clock, skip it and wait for the next urge.
Yeah, that's got to be what he's talking about with him this week, isn't it? I mean, they're watching game film. I mean, they're not dumb. I mean, they're watching game film, and Caton's watching the game film, and he has to himself even be watching and say, man, I was terrible. And the coaches have to say, look, you can't do this. I mean, I don't know what you did at USC. I don't know if you had the greenest green light in the history of green lights, but you don't have that here. It's got to stop, because even if we are going to be small, I mean, there are too many guys on the team for Wojo to continue to put up with that. And again, it's only four games in. Hopefully, like you said, he's going to come back to the mean a little bit. Hopefully he hits some shots next in the next few games. You touched on it briefly, Phil. I think this was probably a very short segment of the show, but I do want to touch on Sandy Cohen leaving the program. A little bit of a surprise to me. I think actually a lot of a surprise to me, because unless he's going to count this year as a redshirt year, he only has one semester left of college basketball unless he is going to transfer and then sit out all of next year and then play in the 2018-19 season, which seems so far away. But Cohen's, like, I understand that he's upset he's not playing, and from that perspective, I get why he would want to move on. But still, I am a little surprised that he bailed out after four games.
This is the confusing part, because, You look at the Sakaar red shirt, right? I mean, they came out early and there was interviews and Wojo said, hey, listen, we talked to all our players and let them know where we stand. And Sakaar was on board with it and all this stuff. So you have to presume that Wojo also had a conversation with Sandy Cohen about what his role could be and will be on this team, given what he saw. And for Sandy to hear all of that, again, I can't imagine that Wojo went and said, oh, you're going to get all these minutes, and then yanked him away. To have that conversation and then decide 4 games in to basically commit to only play one more semester of basketball somewhere or to sit around for a year and a half, and what kind of – you know, what kind of scholarship opportunities are he going to get? Is he going
to
get?
That's the thing. With all due respect to Sandy, I don't know how many programs are going to commit a year and a half a year and a half of scholarships to him before they can finally get him to play for one year. Yeah,
Who's going to be in a position to have that much?
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be a small program that never fills out their scholarships, right? That routinely has like 8 or 9 guys on the roster. And I guess I'm just surprised that he's. I mean, we'll see. Who knows? Maybe he'll shock us all and end up at a Power 6 trademark program. But I just don't see a major program willing to wait a year and a half for Sandy Cohen, or I just don't see him willing to. I just don't see how playing just only one semester left of college basketball is good for him either. I just think if he's unhappy at Marquette, I still think he should have stuck it out this year and then transferred after the year. And then he would get a full year to sit out as a transfer, and then he'd get a full year as a senior like Steve Taylor is doing now at Toledo.
Right.
By the way, who was the MAC Player of the Week last week for the good for Steve.
If he had stayed at Marquette, he would have graduated after last
year. Yeah, he wouldn't be on this team, right? He would have been great to have last year, but that's another story.
Right.
Back to Sandy, before he announced that he was transferring, one of the points I was going to make on this podcast was I was going to challenge Sandy Cohen to take Caton Reinhart's minutes. And because there was a while there, I would say even as recently as a year ago, so like right around the Wisconsin game last year, that Sandy was really starting to come along as a player on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, and it was basically up until the DePaul game last year where he just kind of fell apart in the non-conference. He was coming on real strong.
Yeah, and I was really hopeful that he would be a solid contributor. I wouldn't say star, but I thought he would be a very good player for the rest of his time at Marquette. And you know, his shot disappeared. He stopped making shots, and then eventually he stopped taking shots, and then eventually he stopped playing. And until we got to this year when he was, playing, fringe minutes, like playing 2 or 3 minutes a game. My point was Sandy, the opportunities are there for minutes the way Caton's shooting the ball. If you want to go out and take those minutes at the four, I mean, they're there for you. But he saw it differently.
That has two things. One, along the way, you never openly talk about it on something like a podcast necessarily, but you always have in the back of your mind, you're thinking, are there transfer possibilities? Especially after last year, this summer I would not have been shocked had I heard Sandy Cohen was leaving for another program.
Right, yeah. If he would have announced back in April, I would have said, yeah, I could see that. But
yeah, but then when he stuck through, I thought he was in it for the long haul. He was the original Wojo recruit to a certain extent, if you will. When Buzz left, Sandy was the only one that stuck around from that recruiting class that included Satchel Pierce and Shyock and I'm forgetting one or two others.
Ahmed, I'm sorry, I forgot.
Ahmed Hill.
Ahmed Hill, yeah, he's at
yeah,
Virginia Tech.
Yeah, he was at Virginia Tech, and Shyock went to Virginia, and Pierce went to Virginia Tech as well. But anyway, so Sandy chose to stay at Marquette when he could have left, and then chose to stay all up until this point. So I don't know what changed. And isn't his sister going to Marquette?
She is not only going to Marquette, she is playing very well for Carolyn Keegar's...
That's right. She's a freshman this year.
Yeah, soon-to-be-ranked women's team. I think... or maybe they are ranked now. Did I see the... But, I mean, they beat Arizona State last week, and I Carolyn Keegar's got a good team, but yeah, Sandy's sister does play for that team.
You know, so, you know, I don't know what changes or why you can't stick it out for the year, but so be it. But to your point about the minutes that were there for taking, given what we talked about from Reinhardt's performance so far, what does that say about Sandy's, how Sandy's performed in practices and in games, take those minutes?
Yeah, that just must be the thing. He just, at some point, stop developing, you know, you can't put that on the coaches. If a player's just not coming around and he's not developing, and you just don't see it, then, you know, I guess you can't say, well, we're just going to play him out of charity. I mean, you got to earn those minutes. And yeah, for reasons we may never understand, Sandy's development came to a screeching halt at some point last year, and he just never recovered. So yeah, my thought was, if he was doing anything in practice to earn minutes, we would have seen them at some point in New York, and we never did.
Yeah, they would, even in the Michigan game. I mean, he got some minutes, but it was in garbage time when you know, it was save the legs for the Pitt game. You know, and I wish, and I think you do as well, we wish nothing but the best for Sandy. And who knows, maybe there was some sort of mental block, or maybe he was playing too close to home, or whatever it is. You know, so maybe a change of scenery will unlock his potential, and nothing would make me happier. I wish he could do it here, but, you know, good for Sandy. He's always seemed like a great kid and a good guy to have on the team. So wish nothing but the best. But clearly, whatever it was, it just wasn't working at Marquette.
Yeah, and I hope whatever he is envisioning as far as playing time, I don't know if he'll be able to call this a redshirt year and get another year of eligibility back, or if someone is willing to let him sit for a year and a half before they let him play. But whatever he's looking for in recruiting, I hope he finds it. Hope he gets some playing time, and, you know, good luck to him. But he would have been, like I said, it would have been nice if he could have challenged Reinhardt a little bit for some minutes at the four. But we are stuck with this roster as it is, and the question going forward is with Phil, how much better can this team be? And again, only four games in, and there's still plenty of time. As bad as we feel about the 2K Classic, there is plenty of time to make up for it if this team can figure it out. How can they figure it out?
Well, I think to your point, we get some fattening for the holidays on some cupcakes. I think it gives us some opportunity to, A, feel a little bit better about ourselves as the team, and in the fan base, quite frankly, because I have a sneaking suspicion the fan base is a lot more panicked about this than the team is. At least I hope so. I hope the team's not nearly as fragile as the Marquette fan base is.
If the team is as fragile as the fan base, just shut the whole thing down.
like what are we? Why are we bothering? But you know, so I think they just need some runtime to gel. Again, I think there is to your point, it's not a ton of talent, but there's enough talent there that this team can be a top five conference team in the Big East. They've just got to figure out how to put it together on a consistent basis, right? Because if you look at, you know, there's enough pieces. You look at the majority of the Vanderbilt game, at least three quarters of the Howard game. There were probably the first 10 minutes of the first half and the middle 10 minutes of the second half of the Michigan game that, you know, they played well enough. You've got three quarters of the Pitt game that they played well enough to have a 15-point lead and to fight back. Excuse me. So it's not like they're totally devoid of talent or devoid of ability. They just have to figure out how to do it all the time.
Yeah, and who knows? We may look back in February at a 15-point loss to a top 10 Michigan team and a 3-point loss to on a neutral court to Pitt, and say, it's not so bad. You know, if other things can go well, and as bad as we feel about what happened at the 2K Classic, as we sit here and record this on Monday night, the road trip to Georgia is still basically a 50-50 game, according to KenPom. They're a 1-point dog there. And the Wisconsin game, they're a 1-point dog. They have that as a 47% chance of winning. So that's, again, basically a 50-50 game for what it's worth. Again, there's a small sample size of some of these stats here on KenPom, and Wisconsin's got some big games coming up. They're in Maui, I think. So we'll see how they fare out there. But
well, and the other thing, unlike last year, even if even if they don't get that say the Georgia and the Wisconsin that they lose those two games, at least the cupcakes they have on the left on the schedule doesn't make it nearly impossible for them to make the dance if they do well in conference, right? So they have a little bit more room for error here, but you know they really got to get it figured out over the next three games against IUPUI, Houston Baptist, and Western Carolina. Because IUPUI, remember, took Marquette to overtime last year, so
Yeah,
that's
let's not have that happen again.
let's not do that again. Then the ego, then the fan base gets really fragile. So, you know, over the next 2 weeks, if they can start to pull it together, maybe they can string some wins together, and go into the Big East in a strong position and ready. Because the Big East, I think the top teams in the Big East are probably better even than we thought they were. And there's a few teams that are maybe worse than we thought they were going to be. Georgetown.
But although Georgetown beat Oregon on Monday,
That is true. That is true.
so they have one bigger win than Marquette does right now.
That is also very true. So I don't. It's going to be interesting to see how the non-conference shakes out, because I think that will be an indication of how we do in the Big East. Because I think the Big East is perhaps even a little tougher than we suspected it would be.
Yeah. By the way, I'd like to wish Georgetown the best of luck in their game on Tuesday against Wisconsin.
Yes. That is. I will. We will all be Hoya fans.
Yeah, Hoya
Just
Sacks a
like,
baby.
yeah,
But
just like we were Blue Jay fans a couple of days ago.
Wisconsin sure does play a lot of Big East games, don't they? But
Yeah,
we need to stop that. But yeah, you know, back to your point, Phil. You know, never going to give up on this team being, you know, finding a path to the tournament. As big of a bummer as the 2K Classic was, like you said, if they can get two out of three in that Georgia, Fresno State, Wisconsin slate, then I think they're in decent shape, but they still have to do well in the Big East. I mean, finishing below 500 in the Big East isn't going to get you anywhere, no matter how good the league is. But yeah, they do need to figure out a lot of things before they get to the end of December when Big East play does get going. But the margin for error as far as the non-conference goes did get a lot smaller, right? Because you wanted to get one of those neutral court wins. It would have been really nice to have one of those in your cap. So now you either need to go on the road and beat Georgia, who looks to be a decent team, but not a team that would be impossible to beat necessarily, and then the hated Red Menace when they come to the Bradley Center on December 10th. That would be amazing to get that one, but we'll worry about that when we get closer to it. We just need to figure out, make sure we get through these next three games unscathed before we start getting too excited again.
Right. Well, and I mean, keep in mind, I mean, there's past teams that have done, like, if you go back to 2011, the year the Buzz team with DJO and Jimmy Butler in his second year and Jay Crowder in his first. I mean, clearly NBA talent on that roster, of course. But if you look in the non-conference, they didn't win a single significant game in the non-conference. Got blown out or lost to Vanderbilt, lost to Wisconsin, lost to Gonzaga, lost to Duke. You know, the probably the best win on the calendar was the UW Milwaukee game. You know, so teams can pull it together late. That team ended up going to the Sweet 16. But
Yeah.
and I'm not saying that's the same level, but teams can pull it together.
Of
There's
course they
time to
can.
get there.
There's a lot of time to figure this out, and there's too many players on this roster for Marquette to have no one who's going to step up and be a key contributor. You know, I still think Fisher's going to have, you know, Fisher should have a good year just because he's going to play a ton, and if he can get things figured out on the defensive end, I think he should have a really, really nice senior year. The question is, which one of these one or two or three of these guards is going to step up and really stand out and prove to be the second option, or maybe even the go-to option in crunch time, because you're not going to be able to go into your big man all the time in late game situations. Is it going to be Juwan Johnson? That was my pick before the season. It kind of is. Is Kate Reiner going to shake off all the negativity through four games, and is he going to be the guy? Because, you know, when guys on, like, say, ESPN were breaking down Marquette before the game, they often talked about Kate Reiner like he should be their best player, but obviously, that hasn't been the case. Maybe he can surprise us. You know, all these guys have been great in spurts, right? Dwayne Wilson has been good at times. Hanif Cheatham has been great at times. We saw one good game from Rousey. Will we see more of that? You know, and once he finally got some playing time, he started to play really well. And maybe that's what the thing sometimes with these shooters. Maybe they need to play a little bit to get into some rhythm. But Wojo's balancing that, balancing giving guys enough time to get a rhythm with just giving guys time at all. Because he's looking down his bench and seeing guys who are expected to play getting no time at all. So I don't envy him in that regard, the balance of keeping his players happy with trying to win games, because sometimes that could be mutually exclusive.
Right. Well, yeah, it's tough, and you're going to play different combinations and different players, and there is some room to play the hot hand, as we've said. But, you know, I think the bottom line is somehow this team, there is enough. Each player has shown evidence of being a good player, good to a to great player in spurts, like you said. They just got to find a way to have all the players show that form consistently. And that is the part that concerns me, is we have not seen any kind of consistency out of a Wojo team yet.
Yeah, that's the challenge for the coaching staff. And it'll be easy to figure those things out a little bit against IUPUI and Houston Baptist and Western Carolina. But, you know, what's going to happen when they get punched in the mouth again, and when they have to figure some things out, and when they have to draw some late-game situations, and who is Wojo ultimately going to decide who is going to be my guy in crunch time? Those are things we're going to have to figure out over the next few weeks, Phil. But in the meantime, I'm going to just try and enjoy some turkey and hopefully two wins this week.
Yeah, I'm hoping I will be thankful for a win tomorrow night in which I will be in attendance and severely disappointed if it doesn't go well. And just hope for a righting of the ship so we can feel a little more confident going into that critical three-game stretch.
Yeah, we've picked that out before the season. I mean,
right.
We were going game by game, so like that's going to be a stretch that is going to be so critical. And even the Fresno State game's a trap game. If they somehow go down to Georgia and win, don't be surprised if they come back and have a rough showing against Fresno State, who is not your typical bye game. That one does scare me a little bit, sandwiched between Georgia and Wisconsin. But we'll get to that probably the next time we I guess maybe the next time we do a podcast. We'll see when we're able to do one, Phil. But hope you have a great Thanksgiving, and hopefully Marquette doesn't spoil our appetites by having a rough one on Tuesday.
Yeah, that we can all hope for that, and let's all Twitter responsibly and not get not go on rants like I did for a bit after that Pitt loss. But you know, we will get through this. It is the holiday season upon us. It's time to be thankful that we have a team we can support.
And we're not
going to
get too. Yeah, exactly. We're not going to get too high or too low. We're not going to be talking tournament next week after wins over IUPUI and Houston Baptist. Hopefully we'll just be talking about, well, that was nice, and let's see if we can take another step forward.
Yes, as exactly. Always, lesson learned. We've been humbled.
Yeah. Never too high, never too low. That is our goal moving forward. As always, we welcome your feedback, everyone. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF 23. You can hit us up on the team page at Crack Sidewalks. You can leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com. You can go to the Facebook page where we post the Scrambled Eggs podcast. And, of course, leave your ratings and reviews on iTunes as well. Phil, have a happy Thanksgiving. I hope the Packers don't ruin your appetite next time they take the field.
Too late.
I know I'm very sorry about that. Hey, between Marquette and the Packers, I know it's been some tough goings up there in the cheese state. But we'll get through this together.
Yes. Well, thank you, Joe, and happy Thanksgiving to you and yours as well. And we'll all get back together after a couple of wins here, hopefully, and move on.
All right, we'll get through this together. That's why we're here on Scrambled Eggs. Until next time, seashells and balloons, everyone.